The first question that we would love to ask is, why is ancestry important to you?
It's an interesting question for me, because I think for most of my life, it really wasn't. I didn't think about it. Not for any particular reason. It's just it wasn't sort of in my view. It wasn't really until I came here that I started to look into that question of ancestry and who are my ancestors and what does that mean to me and why is it important? Is it important? And I think the entry point into that for me was this practice. We do earth touchings in the morning after sitting meditation, and every morning I would touch the earth and I would contemplate my blood ancestors, my family, my spiritual ancestors, and the land ancestors. And that was a point of real deep looking for me of what did that mean to have ancestors. And at this point of my practice, kind of what I what I see for that is like I think ancestry is like it's a door to seeing myself more clearly. You know, and in our culture, American culture, there's this real sort of philosophy of like you are an individual and you're kind of like you're supposed to like stand alone and be like this independent figure in the world. Mm. And there are some good parts to that, but it can also be kind of lonely and alienating. And what I have come to through this way of practicing, of looking at my ancestors, and really not just my blood ancestors, but looking at this whole stream of ancestors, is that I am not alone. I am so much greater than an individual. And that all these things that I think of as me, they all come from somewhere. All the wholesome qualities that I might like to hold up and be very happy about, and all the unwholesome qualities, they all come from this very deep stream. And I have found that way of looking, that kind of practice, is very freeing. In some sense, it removes some pressure to be this like individual. I'm not an individual, I'm a whole stream. And at this point, it is I feel very deeply in touch with this practice of taking refuge in my ancestors. Whenever I'm going to do something in the Sangha that I feel is kind of like difficult, or I feel like especially anything where I'm put out in front, where everybody's kind of looking at me, I find some way before I go and do that thing to take refuge. When I do the morning chant in the morning for the Sangha, and the whole Sangha is in sitting meditation, before I go and do the chant, I touch the earth and I ask permission of my ancestors to give the chant, and I ask them to support me and to be there. And when I give the chant in the morning, I don't give the chant. My ancestors give the chant. I'm just here, and I'm just part of the flow. And I find that to be very freeing. it's not all on me, and it's not all about me. And that's what's important about that to me, is ancestry, looking at it, practicing with it in these ways. It's a way to be more free.
Thank you. Really appreciate that way of honoring ancestors and asking for permission before you are doing something where all eyes are on you, and to feel that support of, it's not just all eyes on me, it's all eyes on we, and we're all in this together. I love the quote, I'm not an individual, I'm a whole stream. And I think that really speaks to the global Sangha and the Plum Village tradition and some of the core teachings of our teacher. So thank you, it's so beautiful. I'm just gonna look at my other notes here.
No worries.
I would love to know, what are some of the gifts and traits that you've received from your parents?
Mm-hmm. I think I've been very lucky. I think I received a lot of really good things from my parents. One thing that kind of jumps out at me right away, something that I think has been really important in my life, is my parents always emphasized that it was okay to make mistakes. And that has been so helpful for me throughout the years, because I see, like, the way that I learn is through making many, many mistakes. And with my parents, there has always been this, this openness and this embrace. And many points throughout my life, I was in some sort of difficult period, and things were not going the way I would wish. You'd take a wrong turn somewhere. And it was always that knowing that mistakes are not an obstacle, they're an opportunity, and that is how I get to grow, that is how I get to learn. And here in the Sangha, I feel it is still the same for me. I feel like having that permission to make mistakes that I get from my parents, that it is okay and that it is an opportunity, helps me a lot in my practice. Because in my practice, I make mistakes for sure. I have difficulties. And when I have difficulties, I come back to that of like I've had difficulties before, and I know it's going to be okay, because on the other side of this difficulty, there is something for me to learn. I think my parents were teaching me no mud, no lotus without using the words. You know, they were saying the mud is okay, the mud is good. The mud is what you're going to grow out of. So don't get angry at the mud. Just see how you can use that to move forward. There's another trait of my parents that I see I treasure very highly, which is that they're just very kind people, both in their own way. I think there's just, like, in my parents, there's a lot of deep caring. I remember when I was growing up, I would go with my dad to the grocery store. And when I went with my dad to the grocery store, like, we would buy the groceries, but it seemed like almost not the point, because for my dad, what he would do is he would go to every employee in the grocery store, and he knew everyone on a first name basis. And that was his opportunity to go around and check in on people and say, hi, how are you doing? How are things? Are you okay? And, like, not in a surface level sort of way, but in this very deep sort of, like, Like, he really tries to practice to love everyone. My mom is the same. My mom is an expert builder of harmony. Like, she has this way of taking people who have different backgrounds and different objectives and pulling them together in a way to build stuff, to build teams, to build. I don't know that she thinks about it as building community, but that's what she does. My mom is a community builder, and she just like does it very naturally and skillfully. And I think like one of the things that was really unique in my upbringing was, those were the like the dinner table conversations, where like how like what's going on with people and how can we help facilitate more harmony? How can we bring more kindness into people's lives? How can we do these sorts of things? And I see that has like infused itself in my life. Like I think I am here in large part because that is the way I grew up. Those were the priorities in my house. And there's one other big thing, which is my parents both found Thai quite early on, and they introduced me to Thai at a pretty young age. And it's not just that they introduced me to the practice and to Thai, but that they had the wisdom to do it in such a way where it was never like being pushed on me. It was the first time we came, they just said, "Hey, we're gonna go to this monastery and we're gonna see this monk and he's gonna give a talk. Do you wanna come?" And I just said yes, and I came. And that was here in this hall in 2004. And I don't know what the talk was about because it was in Vietnamese and the translation system broke, which was very, very funny for me. Because later, you know, as a monastic, I worked the sound system, and so I know how hard it is to get that translation system to work. But I just remember Thay's energy, and it made such a big impact on me. And, you know, for the rest of my life, anytime I'm having some sort of difficulty, I come back to that, of like that experience. And, you know, my parents taught me that there is like a refuge. You know, they are a refuge for me, but also like the Sangha is a refuge for me. It is like their openness and their like the lack of pushing. They're always very like everybody figures it out in their own time, and that has been so important for my life, and I feel like it is very important for like the way I interact with other people, because we all go through difficulties and we all need space to figure out those difficulties. And you can't really help people when you're trying to get to an outcome. You have to just plant seeds, plant good seeds, and let them sprout wherever they may. I think like it is that kind of openness that I get from my parents that I feel so grateful for. I feel like that is just, it's such a blessing in my life.
Yeah. Thank you. It's beautiful to know that there are parents that share the message that it's okay to make mistakes. I know in many other households that might not be true, where mistakes were bad or would warrant punishment, and I would be curious to hear if there is someone who's reading this and or maybe listening to this, and they grew up in that environment where mistakes were not okay. What would you tell them?
Hmm. you know, in that kind of environment, like that, there are reasons why for some people there's this feeling that mistakes are not okay. And there are reasons why they pass those down onto their children. You know, with my parents, the reason why it was so important for them to transmit to me that it was okay to make mistakes was because they grew up in an environment where it was not okay to make mistakes. And to hear them talk about that, like, you know, it is because their parents were also going through things that were very difficult and in some cases like very dangerous. And so I think, like, you know, if you're in that sort of environment and somebody is telling you it's not okay to make mistakes, like, one part of it is to, if you can, to have some understanding of, like, this person that's giving you this message, like, they're also a stream, you know? They have ancestors, and those ancestors went through stuff. And, like, they're doing their best. And this feeling of you can't make mistakes, it comes from somewhere. It comes from a place of very deep suffering. And sometimes, like, people cannot see the way out of that suffering. It's so deeply ingrained over generations that the idea that it is okay to make mistakes is unfathomable. And so when I practice with this, like, I think about my grandparents and their parents and the things that they went through. And I know, like, that is very difficult. I have compassion for them, and I know that when I can practice in this way, when I can say it is okay, I don't just, like, it's not just okay for me, it's okay for them too. They did not have the freedom and the space to, like, to make mistakes. Like, maybe if they made mistakes, like, there were really real consequences, you know? Like, bad things would happen. But I am in a safe place. And I can make mistakes, and when I let myself transform that feeling, because that is still in me, I can still feel that fear from my ancestors, but I get to transform it, and that is very beautiful, and I know I'm taking care of that for them. So that is, like, one part, is like if you can, to look deeply and have understanding, that it's just not like, it's not about you. Like, when somebody's telling you it's not okay, it's not about you. It's because they also grew up in that situation of somebody telling them it is not okay. And I think the other thing is, like, you have to practice to love yourself. That environment where mistakes is not okay is an environment where nothing is ever good enough. And when that is the message, like, it is very hard to take care of yourself and to love yourself. You're always trying to achieve your way out, or to make everything safe, or to check off all the boxes, or whatever it is. And the thing that is lacking is that love for yourself. It has to start there. When you love and you understand yourself, then you're able to love and understand your parents or whoever it is, and then you can love and understand your ancestors, but it's gotta come here first. If it's not here, it's not anywhere. Not that that makes it easy. It doesn't make it easy. But I think that is it, that is the way. You gotta start by loving yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just digesting all of that. And feel free to chime in if you have any questions or comments as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear more about, you know, It sounds like that seed of fear that you mentioned from your grandparents and ancestry is still present, and you get to transform that through the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other difficulties or challenges or beliefs that you've especially been grappling with lately?
Sure. Yeah, there are always challenges. There are always things I'm grappling with. One that is pretty consistent, and it comes from the same place, like that fear of that need to get everything right. Like my parents both got that in different ways, I think, but I first noticed this in myself, and then when I noticed it in myself, I saw like very clearly, oh, that's in my parents, and oh, okay, now I see where this comes from. But I think of it as we have a problem with chronic responsibility, and what it is, you know, is like when you have this sort of fear about getting everything right, when there's this thing coming from your ancestors, we're not getting stuff right, is like dangerous. You make sure to get everything right. And my parents are the most responsible people in the world. Like, they always show up. They always show up on time. They're always prepared. They've always got everything in order. Like, they're on it. They're on it. And I have also got that in me. And one of the things that has taken me some time to learn, and that I'm still practicing with, is like sometimes these traits that we have, that we look and we see like, oh, this is actually, you know, this is good. I'm a very responsible person, and you know, like out there in the world, it's very desirable. That gets you jobs. That makes you money. It's very. Oh, yeah, that's a source of pride. But when you look really deeply, you see, like, some of these traits actually come from a place of very deep suffering. And it has been, like, a practice for me to see that, like, a lot of the times my tendency towards responsibility in the community is coming from this place of, like, trying to take care of that fear and not knowing how to take care of it. Like the responsibility is a way to stay safe. But having projects and always looking into the future and seeing what is gonna go wrong and how is it gonna go wrong and how can I plan for it, like that it's actually like this way of trying to create some sense of security. And that it is ultimately kind of, it doesn't help. It doesn't help because you're never gonna plan your way out of everything. You can't create safety really that way. You can create a sense of safety, but you're always seeking. And so that I see as something I work with in the Sangha of like when I see in myself this need to like take on whatever the task is or to take care of people, or I'm thinking about what's gonna happen next and I'm planning ahead and all of these things, like it is because I'm still like trying to create some sense of safety in this way. And it's very like, it's very subtle, and it's very difficult for me to take a step back and say, actually, I need to not do these things, because it's coming from the wrong place. Something I'm learning to practice within the Sangha is I have all these skills and it's great, but I'm trying to deploy these skills when I'm doing them from a place of security and when I'm really like just helping people because it's like the opportunity is there and because I can. But when I see like I'm actually like this is the seed of fear, it's this thing in me that is pushing me, and I just want to deploy my skills because it makes me feel more secure, then I have to say no. That is something I am working with, which I find very challenging to work with, is like saying no. Because when I say no, like all these things come up of like, there's like the, you know, something is going to go wrong, something bad is going to happen if I say no. But also, like, what are people going to think about me? Is anybody going to love me and care about me if I say no? If I don't show up to everything, if I don't do all the stuff all the time, like, if I say no, what will happen to me? And that is, I mean, that is something I've been working with for a while, but it is very alive in me. And, like, what is... been beautiful for me in the Sangha is actually I see my siblings want me to say no. Like, it is not like there's this fear that everybody's gonna like not love me if I don't do all the things, but it's just me. I see they love me anyway. Like, they love me for who I am. It's not about the things that I do. And I have this. It's kind of like a new mantra for myself that I've been practicing with, of like, I see I don't care about myself as much as I care about other people. I put myself second a lot, and so I'm trying to care about myself the way other people care about me. And that has been very fruitful for me, because many people are just telling me, like, slow down. Like, it's okay. You don't have to do all the stuff. And, like, trusting in that. Trusting that, like that love is still going to be there. And letting myself feel it. Letting myself touch that care. That helps me a lot. But it is, like, every day. Every day working with these feelings. And finding security, like, in myself. And letting myself feel secure. And not having it be about the things that I do. I have other difficulties too, but I don't know how much time you have. I could go on for a long time.
It's been about 30 minutes. Wow. Yeah, this is so beautiful. What I'm hearing is that you're learning how to honor the sacred no. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, myself included. And I think it helps having other people around that honor your no. Like you said, your siblings want you to say no. And that makes it a little bit easier. And I think it's important to be with people that honor our no and encourage us to honor and care for ourselves as well. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, some more juicy questions.
Go for it.
What is something that people don't know about you or might be surprised to hear about you?
I always feel like this is kind of a difficult question for me. I'm sort of an open book. I'm very kind of plain, simple life kind of person. But I guess one thing that people might not know, might be kind of surprising, is like when I was a kid, I was a very, like, I don't know that I was like shy exactly, but I was just, maybe I was kind of shy. I just loved to, like, I was very happy to take care of myself and be by myself. I loved people, but I was very, like, content on my own. And I loved to read. And, like, my greatest happiness was to just sit down and read all day. And there was like this funny thing of, you know, like other kids growing up, they do something they're not supposed to do. You know, punishment is like you can't go play with your friends. You've got to stay inside. It never worked on me. My parents could not punish me in that way. There was nothing they could take away from me because I was very content to just like, I could hang by myself very easily. The punishment in my household, the way my parents figured out like the thing they could make me do that I didn't want to do, if I did something wrong, my punishment was I had to go make friends with the neighbor's kids. That was... Oh yeah, that worked on me. It's funny now because I've spent most of my adult life learning how to learning how to communicate and learning how to talk to people and how to be in front of groups and like I can do all of these things and whatever, but inside of me is still like that little kid who just like, I just wanna sit down and read a book. Like, that's all. I'm very happy that way. It does seem to surprise people when they hear that because otherwise I'm very outgoing. I'm always like whatever the Sangha is doing, wherever people are, I wanna be where people are. I love people. I love to be included. I love to build community. It is my joy. But inside of me is still that kid. It's just kind of, I just want to hang out and do my own thing sometimes. You wanna punish me, make me go play with the neighbor's kids. That's the hard thing for me.
Wonderful. And I think some people might also know that you are a painter and a musician and involved with all kinds of things here, like planning the Buddha the Scientist retreat and sure. Supporting with audio stuff. So would love to hear more about your creative endeavors with painting and music, if you care to share more about that. What's been creatively inspiring you lately?
Sure. You know, for me, I think I came to creative endeavors kind of a little bit later than most people. Like, I started drawing and painting when I was like 24, 25, and I actually came to it as a way to kind of confront something that I was sort of scared of. Like, it was a way of working with those like perfectionist seeds. It was a way of like letting myself be okay with making mistakes, but I had no intention of being artistic. And the when I first started, I thought of myself as this very like analytically kind of rigorous sort of person. Like that was how my mind worked. That was what I thought I was. I thought I was that person who would just like pick all the things apart and put them back together and be very like logical and, you know, love puzzles and things like that. And what I have found in art is that there's this whole other part of myself that just needs creativity and needs to be intuitive, not logical, but intuitive. And that is healing for me and that it gives me balance. When I'm not creating, I don't have like balance in my life. I get too far into the end of planning. So like when I'm doing stuff like sound or like the science retreat or whatever it is, those are things that really touch those seeds of like very, very rigorous, analytical, step-by-step. And those are the very things that actually inspire me to go and be creative, and that I see like if I don't do the creative things, if I don't sit down and draw and paint and whatever else, I can't do the planning things. I can't do these other things because I get out of balance. My my mindset gets, I something happens to me, and it's like I lose my ability to, I don't know how to explain it, but something is lost. So like lately I have been drawing and painting a lot, but it's not necessarily like I start off with like a goal. I don't have a point that inspires me. It's more like I'll be sitting there and I'll just feel like I need this right now. Like I can feel it moving through my body, this creative influence. And I don't know what I'm gonna create. I have no idea. It's just, I can feel it in my hands, and I just need to sit down, and I just start scribbling and sketching and see what happens. And sometimes things manifest. But for me, like what is so important about my creative process is that I don't have a goal, that I'm not laying out a bunch of steps. And then, you know, sometimes after I've been playing around with some stuff, I'll look at something some idea that has been sort of coming up, and I'll decide I want to create like a finished version of this. And then I'll like plan it out a little bit and figure out what does this need to look like in the end. This painting I brought, that's from our outing to the Redwoods this year. And I had a photo of this view from when we were there. It's on the Smith River. And I had a bunch of photos, and I just, like, it was in one of these moments where I just felt suddenly like I needed to create. And the reason I was doing that one was just because I liked the curve of the river and the way the trees silhouetted against the sky. And that was it. And I didn't know what was going to happen with that. And I drew it probably four times before I decided, okay, this is actually something I want to paint. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of happened, and it happened very quickly and organically because it was all intuitive. There's no judgment of it. All the mistakes are okay. It's just like, I just do it for me. I'm not doing it for anyone else. And then it just manifests. It just sort of happens. And something that does inspire me in the Sangha is when I get to have conversations with other siblings or like lay people who are coming in, who are also kind of doing art for the same reasons, coming from like a similar sort of mindset. Because for many people, like to do art this way is very healing. It gives you a freedom that otherwise you don't get. So many of us, we live in this world that is very like rigidly scheduled, and you've got to do all the things, and they've all got to be on time, and you know, you spend all day writing emails or whatever it is. And like to be able to sit down, like when you paint in this way, that part of your mind that is always thinking, the conversational part of your mind, it just goes quiet, and you're working through a different avenue. And you know, I think the best thing about it is like it gives you rest. Mm. Like this part of the brain that is always thinking, like Ty called it, like we have this radio nonstop thinking, radio NST, and it's always running. And one of the first times I learned like what it was like to have that quiet down was when I was painting. And it's like, it is a meditative experience in and of itself, because that part of your mind, like, it's tired. Mm-hmm. It needs a rest. You gotta give it a rest. And that other part of your mind that's like intuitive and just wants to create, it wants to build, it wants to have this joy. You've gotta let it do its thing, and you've gotta just,
feel that way with dance.
Yeah.
When I'm dancing, it's just something takes over, and the creative flow is,
yeah,
I'm just creating with movement and breath and sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't have to think about it that much.
Yeah.
It just happens.
It's just natural. And I'm curious how the practice supports with that, with getting out of the monkey mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's think of maybe like a writer's block, or someone who does want to start painting or creating, but they just can't seem to access that intuitive, creative part. How does the practice support you in that?
I don't know what it would be for everyone else, but I can tell you what it was for me. What was blocking me was my own idea of myself in a lot of ways. You know, like a lot of people who are, especially like coming to drawing, but I think to a lot of artistic sort of endeavors for the first time, they look at what other people do, what other people create, and the thinking that comes up is, I am not like that, I cannot do that. And if I do not do like that, then I am a failure. You know, I am not that kind of person. I think a place where we often get caught is we think of ourselves as like a certain kind of person. I am the kind of person that does XYZ. I am not the kind of person that does ABC. And that was what it was for me. Is I thought I was a kind of person that did. I was not the kind of person who did art. I was the kind of person who did math and built things, and that was who I was. And when I looked at people who created like these really beautiful things that I felt very in touch with, because I sat down and my first attempt didn't look like that, I said, I am a failure. I am not that kind of person. And I was very lucky. I had a teacher who I told, like I'm coming because I have this terrible fear about drawing, and that it's going to be awful and I'm awful. And he said, it's okay, we're going to work through it. And it took weeks. Like, it helps to have somebody who supports you. But to know, it's like, it isn't about creating some masterpiece. Like, it is about, like, loving yourself and taking care of yourself and nourishing joy in yourself. Like, it's the same way we practice with everything else here. Like, you do it because there's joy there. You do it because there's healing there, because there's transformation there. Not because, you know, you're gonna be the next Picasso or something. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm. Just, you do it because it brings joy. You know, like sometimes people will ask you, like, you know, why do you go to sitting in the morning? Why are you monastic? And, you know, why do you do these things? And you know, you can give like a really long answer, but the simple answer is we do it because we like it. That's it. We like it. It works for us. It makes us happy. It helps us get through like the difficulties in life. I think if, you know, somebody is reading this and they're thinking like, how do I get past this block? How do I get past this fear? It's like, you know, why do you want to do this? Like, who do you want to be? Not who do you think you are, but, you know, if you want to be, like, joyful, you want to have happiness in your life, you've got to be kind to yourself. You've got to let go of that voice that says you're this and this is all you'll ever be. And you got to go and not be afraid of making mistakes. Tell yourself it's okay. And when that first one is not so good, you just do another one, and then another one, and then another one, and then someday you're going to look at it and be like, hey, this is actually pretty cool. But it's like having that, you just got to be kind to yourself. There's no other way.
This metaphor for painting is so perfect for metaphor for life, like what you said about it doesn't have to be a masterpiece, it's just something that brings you joy, and doesn't have to be perfect, doesn't have to be an outcome, it's just something that I like, something that inspires me and feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can carry over to so many aspects of life where we find ourselves struggling and striving and goal setting and needing to have things a certain way. Mm-hmm. And what beautiful seeds that were sown from your parents that kind of planted this idea that it's okay to make mistakes. And with that seed, comes this this garden of allowance and trial and error, and the masterpiece that is naturally the masterpiece without needing it to be a masterpiece. So I think we'll probably end on that note, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
I think that was a beautiful way to end it, with that sentiment, and kind of wraps everything together.
Mm.
So thank you again for your time, your energy, and your wisdom.
Thank you, brothers. Thank you, Sarah. I can end with two sound bells.